solar ambulances saving money, telemedicine video conferencing reducing EMS call volumes, and what would you do if you were preparing a team for the annual GEMS Games at EMS Today? Well, if that's what you're looking for, you found it right here on this week's episode of the Medic Cast.
Transmitters? We don't need no stinking transmitters!
This is the Medicast, a podcast for EMS providers by EMS providers, featuring EMS news, products, tips, tricks, and commentary. So grab your gear and glove up. Here's today's show with the pod medic, Jamie Davis.
Well, good day and welcome to this week's episode of the Medic Cast. I'm your host, Jamie Davis, the pod medic, and I'd like to welcome all of you to the program this week. We've got a great show for you. In this episode, we're going to be looking at three segments I recorded at EMS Today 2016 in Baltimore back at the end of February. We interview two of the EMS 10 awardees about their innovative improvements on EMS care in their systems. Then I chat with GEMS Games team captain, Jerry Brenner, who got a team together and trained them to compete in the annual GEMS Games at EMS Today this year. All of these segments were recorded in special thanks to the Physiocontrol in their booth, and I want to thank them for their sponsorship. We have all three of those segments. They'll be coming up just a bit in this episode of the MedicCast. Before we get to that, though, I do want to make sure you do a couple of things. You need to make sure that you're following up on the links and additional information that I have available for you at the MedicCast blog at mediccast.com/blog. You can click the show notes link at the top of the page. It'll take you right to the most recent episode. You can scroll down and find previous episodes, too. But I want you to head over there and look for the things that I talk about in the show. And then I want you to make sure that you take some time so that you can see and understand how those things I talk about apply or don't apply to your own EMS practice and protocols. If you want to get back in touch with me, I hope you'll do so. You can always reach out to me and email me at podmedic@mac.com. So shoot me an email with your comments or questions on an episode, or you can send me suggestions or ideas for a future episode. Either way, I will get back to you. I respond back to every email that comes in, and I'll get back to you as well. So please keep those emails coming. That's it for our contact information. Let's go ahead and get on into the rest of the show. It's coming up in just a sec. First up this week, let's take a look at what you can do to make your ambulance services fleet greener. No, I'm not talking about a new coat of paint. I'm talking about going solar. Dan Fellows is the fleet manager of the Richmond Ambulance Authority. The story of the RAA's fleet development and strategy has been told many times, and I've talked about it here as well. It's evolved into a reliable, robust, and mission-ready set of vehicles. Dan Fellows is the architect of this success. Dan's been the architect of that success for many years and in many ways. He's applied management techniques, leadership, and innovation in the development of services for those groups of ambulances. His addition of solar panels to the entire fleet created savings in fuel and maintenance costs for his system. Check it out.
Hi, Jamie Davis here from EMS Today 2016 in the Physiocontrol booth. I'm here with another one of the EMS 10 awardees from Richmond Ambulance Authority, and we're going to all say hi and wave to Rob. Hey, Rob. So he's back there taking pictures. I have Dan Fellows with me, and Dan, congratulations, first of all, on winning this award. It's really important for us to recognize innovators in EMS, and what you're doing is something that is really very different from what I've heard other services doing out there, which is putting solar power arrays on the ambulances and using it to help cut costs. Tell us a little bit about how that program came about.
Well, back in 2008, we had a resource vehicle that we needed to keep the batteries charged on, and it wasn't available for a shoreline. So we decided to give a solar panel a try, see what it would do for it. We did some testing. We actually ran a year's worth of data on the truck and found that the solar panel did keep the batteries maintained, and it gave us the opportunity with the extra available electricity to try it on an ambulance. So we moved off to the ambulance test model, got great results out of the data. Found that it kept our engines from idling up, allowed us to maintain about a 4-amp charge above what the required power use was for all the different charges on the truck. And it also gave us the added benefit of blocking the sun from the roof of the truck, which helped them be a little cooler in the summer.
So that makes a big difference. It gets hot down in Richmond in the summertime.
It does.
I think it's bad here in Maryland, but I know it's worth farther south. So yeah.
Hot and humid.
Hot and humid. So what have you seen? Is this something you've put across all the ambulances in your service or just a few? I mean, how's the expansion going?
All of our modular units, all the Type 1 and Type 3 trucks have solar panels on the roof.
Wow.
We started in 2010 with a full project. We finished up last year with the last of our re-chassis that we do. So every last one has two 130-watt panels on the roof.
And you've been able to make that work for all your systems. What are other services saying about this? I'm sure they're paying attention to what you do.
I get many phone calls from others asking about the benefit. And I tell them we're system status management. We post on street corners, so our trucks are usually out in the sun in order to help with our power draw. The solar panels work great. If you're a station base, it may not do as well because you have a house to go back to and plug in. So it depends on your model. It depends on how your runs are. But there's a different solution out there for everybody, and it's keeping our eyes open, looking outside the box to find those solutions.
Well, I mean, even if the ones that go back into the station, they could also put solar panels on the roof of their station and supplement that way as well. I mean, there's all sorts of ways to go about this process to create a greener powered ambulance.
Exactly.
So what is this? What are you guys looking at moving forward? Is this something that you're continuing to expand in other areas?
Yes, forward. We are currently with solar panels. I want to look at developing an idle-off solution for my trucks. Because we're system status management, we collect the data, and we understand what our average on-post times are. So if I can develop a system that we can shut the trucks off, I can cut 4 to 6 hours worth of idle time off of a truck per day.
And that would be a significant savings in maintenance and fuel. Additional costs, fuel, just the life of the vehicle.
Yes.
That's amazing. Well, I want you to keep in touch with me about this. I want to hear about how this moves forward because I think this is something that can be affecting everybody in other state and other services. And I want to thank Richmond Ambulance Authority for continuing to innovate and do pretty amazing things with what you do, not just with the provision of care for the patients, but just making sure our vehicles are able to work the way they need to work.
That's what I get paid for.
Well, great. Thanks, Dan.
Thank you.
And I want to thank all of you for checking out this segment here from EMS Today 2016. We're here in the Physio Control booth, and we will have more segments from the EMS 10 awardees and other great interviews here at this channel, so keep checking back for more.
Next up in our coverage of the EMS 10 awardees, let's take a look at what one medical director is doing to manage non-emergency EMS patients in his system using telemedicine resources. Dr. David Purse developed a unique, innovative technology-based program back in December 2014 called ETHN, Emergency Telehealth Navigation Program. It's in the Houston Fire Department area, and they're using advanced telehealth technologies and community-based resources to reduce excessive primary care-related 911 calls. We get the patients to the correct medical appointment location or treatment facility. Now, ETHN utilizes all department response units, a central control console staffed by a physician, and a two-way Panasonic video and data computers to put the patient, the physician, and the crew in instant two-way contact where they can properly channel the patient to the right medical facility and release EMS resources to handle higher priority calls. Here's that segment with Dr. Purse.
Hi, Jamie Davis, the pod medic here in EMS Today 2016 in the Physio Control booth. We're really excited to be talking to the different EMS 10 awardees. I have Dr. David Purse here. And Dr. Purse, congratulations on winning the EMS 10 award.
Well, thank
you very
much.
That's great to see all the innovation that happens that people are doing all over the country. And you're in Houston, and you're actually bringing telehealth services and combining them with EMS services to help patients get to not necessarily the ER, but to right. The place they need to go.
Right.
So tell us a little bit about your background and then what you're doing in Houston.
So I first became an EMT back sometime in the late 1970s, early 80s. I don't even remember it so long ago. And even way back then in Buffalo, New York, where I started off, we would go out on calls of people who had a twisted ankle from 3 days ago, I've got a rash, I'm out of my medications, the usual sort of non-emergency things we deal with. And it just seemed, even back then, that there was a better way to take care of them. So as I've gone through my career, and now as a medical director for a major urban area, it occurs to me, we're using the most expensive form of transportation to the most expensive form of unscheduled health care. And by golly, we got to be able to do something better than that. So that's where it all started.
Yeah, so you've got, is it called the Ethan program?
Right, the Ethan stands for Emergency Telehealth and Navigation. And the and navigation part is key, which people sometimes forget about. We can talk about that if you want.
Absolutely. So the telehealth part of it, I guess you just have a basic two-way communication with the hospital and the doctor and the ER to communicate that way?
Well, kind of yeah, kind of no.
Okay.
So the firefighters have got tablets for their electronic patient care records, and it's got a camera and a microphone on it. And so we basically let them do a telemedicine conversation with the patients that they select. So they go out on scene, they'll do an assessment of the patient, and they'll decide this is a low acuity and it meets our guidelines, and then they'll communicate with the doctor. Now, the doctor is not somebody who's working in the ER, because they have to be, the doctors need to be dedicated to this function, because firefighters, they haven't got time to be waiting for the doctor to come out of room 7. So the doctors are sitting there, they're waiting. Now, these are emergency physicians who work in our community, and this is like a side job for them. So we only expect the docs to work one, maybe two shifts, you know, a month, maybe three shifts a month. But they're, because they've got that skill set, you know, see somebody quick and you know, make a decision. So the firefighters do an assessment. They then give that assessment to the physician. The physician then has the opportunity to speak with the patient and quickly determine whether or not they need an ambulance or if they even need the emergency department. And then they've got options. We can schedule a cab to come and pick you up now and take you to an emergency department, or we can schedule a cab to pick you up and bring you to the clinic appointment that we schedule for you now for the next day or maybe even later that same day. And one of the things is, as everybody in our system is getting better, these interactions are now taking about 9 minutes total.
Wow.
So our firefighters' on-scene time is dropping to in the 20-minute range.
And they're not transporting the patient.
And they're not transporting the patient. And not only that, but one of the most important statistics is that of the times the firefighters connect with the doctor for this, 82% of the time we're not using the ambulance.
That's fantastic. And so the navigation portion of it is really navigating the patient to the care they need.
Close.
But all right.
Pull fast
I'm getting there.
You are. The and navigation part is we have also worked with the city's health department. And so they will follow up with these patients who called with things for which they really should have known to go to primary care in the first place and find out why is it that you didn't know how to navigate your way through the healthcare system. So the emergency telehealth is that front part where we deal with the patient acutely. And the end navigation is the back end where the next day or over the next couple of days, we have somebody reach out with that patient and get them, ideally we'll get them a medical home. And really, a lot of it is just educating people on how to use the healthcare system. A lot of these folks have already got resources they don't even know. They just don't know how to use them.
Right.
So a lot of education. So we don't have somebody, one thing we don't want to do, we don't want to create a system where people call 911 in order to get a cab to a free clinic appointment. Right, so that's why the and navigation part is so
important,
so we don't get people just repeatedly using this system.
So in this day and age of hospital quality ratings, what's the patient quality score on something like this? Are they very happy with it?
So I'll tell you this, we've got, we're pushing 6,000 contacts now. We've had one complaint.
That's
amazing. Yeah, so the patients are really pretty happy with it. We've really not had any complaints. Now, you know, knock on wood, this is medicine, right? So it's an inexact science, but so far, so good.
Now, I just talked to somebody. This sort of is a different approach to the kind of community care approach of EMS. Did you need to do any changes to the law or to the existing statute in Texas to make this work, or is this something that works under your existing programs?
Okay, so this is something which works under the existing programs in Texas. So,
that's great.
Now, Texas is a delegated care state.
Okay.
So the physicians are actually delegating the care, you know, through the EMTs and paramedics. But quite honestly, that didn't really come into it a whole lot. But that is one big difference in Texas law versus other states, but that really didn't play a lot into it. So we were able to do it within the existing statutes.
Good, because I know that we're dealing with that here in Maryland, and the last gentleman I talked to, Sean Maxwell from Washington State, they had to actually make the changes to the state law so they could put a community paramedicine program in place where they could help people like that. So.
Yeah, you're right. In a lot of states, they've got to deal with the legislative rules that are in place.
So you've got this working and running in Houston. Are there any plans to start piloting it in other places, other locations?
So we're open to help anybody start it. We were fortunate in Texas that we had funding to start this through what's called an 1115 waiver, and that is a waiver of the way CMS monies are usually distributed through the state. And CMS set this up so that basically to stimulate innovative ideas on ways to save the healthcare system money. And so there was a fairly sizable cost to this up front because we had to buy some computer infrastructure, we got to pay for the doctors, things like that. But what we're finding is on the back end, it's saving way more than its cost. Let me give you an example. So with the cabs, we're paying $35 per cab ride, flat fee. No matter how far they go, it's flat fee, $35. The ambulance is in Houston, by city ordinance, is $1,000, base fee plus mileage and any, you know, supplies that we had to use. So that averages to be about $1,250, somewhere in that range. If you look at what we actually collect from the third-party payers and from those who pay their bills, it's about $425, $450. That's a pretty standard across the nation. So we're paying $35, and we're saving the healthcare system, even if you just look at the payment as opposed to the charges, we're saving the healthcare system that $450, and we're spending $35. That's a greater than 90% savings to the healthcare system. The problem is we got to get the folks that are saving the money downstream to start paying for this stuff upstream. And so that is a thing which has yet to occur in other communities.
So bringing in our payers, our insurance companies and whatnot, to recognize this and say this is a valid use of our resources to take care of this rather than spend it elsewhere.
Absolutely. For the third-party payers, this is a huge return on investment for them. And that's just the ambulance. If you look at the emergency department, the American Hospital Association, we got it off the web, estimates the average emergency department bill is around $1,350. So we've worked it out with the clinics that they need to try and find out if these people have some form of reimbursement already to pay for that clinic appointment, but they don't. We'll pay them $110. We guarantee they'll at least get that. Well, $1,350 versus $110, again, you're greater than 90% savings to the healthcare system. But those third-party payers, we need to connect them. You know, I think EMS has been off their radar, unfortunately, and we need to get on their radar because we can save them, we can save them an awful lot of money and improve care to the patient.
I think so. I mean, it's something that we've recognized. I think we in EMS have recognized it for a long time. And it's nice to finally have somebody else paying attention to that. Mm-hmm. And hopefully the rest of the healthcare system picks up on it as well.
I believe that they will.
Well, Dr. Peirce, thank you so much for innovating. And congratulations again on your EMS 10 award.
Thank you, Jamie. Appreciate it.
And I want to thank all of you for checking out this segment here from Innovations in Patient Care. Remember, we're here in the Physio Control booth at EMS Today 2016. And we'll follow up back here at this channel where you're watching this to catch more episodes coming up soon.
Finally, in this week's coverage of the EMS Today attendees is a look at what one group of EMS providers did to prepare for the annual GEMS Games, EMS Patient Care Scenario Competition. Jerry Brenner is a friend of mine on Facebook, and I saw that he and his team were prepping to go down and compete against others in this amazing contest of EMS knowledge, skills, and critical thinking. So check out this segment where I chat with Jerry about what they did to prepare for the games this year.
Hi, this is Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic here at EMS Today 2016 in the Physio Control booth, and I'm really excited to be talking with Jerry Brenner here. Jerry is one of the participants in this year's GEMS Games, and I've always wanted to interview somebody from one of the GEMS Games teams to talk about how they prepare for this event. I mean, for me, it would scare me to death because I would think I was back in EMT class right when I was a basic and I was afraid I wasn't strapping somebody to the backboard right. You know what I'm talking about.
Do exactly. And we had a lot of that today. And even as we were preparing, and it's a good question that you ask, how do we prepare? We looked at a lot of video. So we kind of saw, but that really doesn't prepare you for actually going through the stations. It was challenging because we had to get completely new bags because we kind of work out of boxes and out of our truck, which we have got a lot of different things. We'll take what we need. Well, this you have to take everything with you, and you've got to be prepared for
anything.
The evolution today and then the disaster tomorrow. So we got three bags, and we kind of had to put all of our stuff in there. We spent a couple of days getting stuff in, going, oh, this doesn't work. We have to try something different. We tried a couple of different bags. One of our suppliers was nice enough to donate some or give us a break on bags. The bags worked really great for us. Today, it was exactly that. It's identify this placard and what are the things you need to know? How far do you need to stay away? Take all your stuff through a window, much like you would. Up a ladder, we had to hoist all of our stuff up. It was supposed to simulate three stories. We only went up about 6-8 feet. But be that as it may, it was still simulating moving our gear up, finding a patient up there, treating them, hooking them up to the monitor, which we had some technical difficulties on, and then moving that patient on a backboard downstairs, doing some more CPR, and then moving them through a serpentine, which was very entertaining on a very, very old stretcher.
So you really had to, there was no way to really prepare for that other than to just be good basic providers.
And we really did. We go, and our team was very good. It was all people who were seasoned folks with our company. And we said, we're just going to handle it like a regular call. We're going to improvise. We're going to do, you know, those things that we know to do. And if things come up that we don't understand or isn't working out right, we'll adapt. We'll overcome. We'll do what we always do. And that's pretty much what we did today. The groups that have been doing this for years sequentially, they've done great. And they were super strong participants. Great folks. It's been great camaraderie. We had people going up going, here, I'm going to give you this hint. And it was very helpful because, it, as a first-timer, we really didn't know what we were getting ourselves into.
So we kind of skipped over this, but tell us about where your system is and what your team look like and layout.
So we are we're a suburban system. We're about an hour outside of Philadelphia, to the north and west, outside of Reading, Pennsylvania. We are a volunteer, or I'm sorry, we're a part-time, full-time EMS company. It's a not-for-profit company. Our team consisted of everybody who was paramedics, but three of our paramedics are also nurses. So two of us are critical care transport nurses down at some of the larger metropolitan hospitals, as well as doing this on the side. So it was a great deal of experience, but we weren't prepared for everything we found today. So, and I think that's the way it was supposed to be. I think that was by intention.
Were you able to pass through to the next level, or?
Well, we missed it. It was the top three got to go forward. We finished 12 out of 18 teams. So not
the bottom. You're right in the middle.
We were 10 minutes behind the fastest, and 10 minutes faster than the slowest. So we felt pretty good about that.
So are you coming back next year?
We actually are. We've already figured out what we're going to do and some of the things we can already do to improve.
So you've got to set the bar, and you know this is one of those things that I've seen teams come through and get better year after year, mm-hmm. and then they set their sights on, you know, one year it was the Australian team that everybody wanted to beat them, right?
Yep.
And then it was New York EMS, and
they've been the ones to beat, and Nevada's been a strong player as well. So there's we were sequestered for a while today. We were hanging out with a group from Toledo, and they had a men's team and a women's team competing,
cool.
Which was very interesting, and they were super nice. Everybody has been so great and so helpful and so inviting. It's like, we're glad you're here. We're glad you're doing this, and we were very excited to do it as well.
So what piece of advice would you offer to maybe somebody who's watching this or listening to this that says, well, I wonder if I can put together a GEMS Games team?
So I guess the first thing is get support from your organization. Our chief was very emphatic. He said, we're doing a team. It's right here. It's as close as it's ever going to be. We pulled some of our staff, you know, who wants to do this? I actually got pulled in because one of our full-time paramedics went, I don't want to be out doing this in front of everybody, the same thing. I don't want to have paramedic school all over again. So they brought me in. We gathered our equipment together. We practiced some of the scenarios. We watched the YouTube videos. Everybody's got a video from years past. And then for tomorrow, which I don't think you're going to catch it for tomorrow, but we reviewed this year's GEMS magazines because it seems like the things that were big pieces in the previous year show up on the Friday scenario.
Okay.
So a helicopter crash last year was a big example of that. This year, we wouldn't be terribly surprised to see an active shooter scenario.
Right.
Things that were very big this year in GEMS seem to show up on Friday. Not that I can tell you or guess that. I can't look into my mirror ball or into my crystal ball.
By the time people see this, it will have already happened,
already,
and you'll already know. But, definitely your advice is to go for it.
Absolutely. It was an incredible amount of fun. We had such a good time working together. These are people I've worked with for years, and we got to know each other better. We got to have a lot of fun playing and practicing and going, well, what would we do? One of the things that we did that was unique, we saw the judges who says, I've been doing this since the beginning and nobody's ever asked this question. We had to do CPR as we were moving on the gurney. Well, we had an old stretcher, which is what we had today, and we found out that the head, because of the articulation, bounced so much when you were doing CPR and the mannequin's counting how well you're doing compressions. We flipped our patient around and we did CPR on the back end, which didn't vibrate quite as much.
That gave us a
better platform to do CPR. Now, would we do this in the field? Probably not. We throw our Lucas on and we go forward.
Right.
speaking up, but we throw our Lucas on and we go forward. But to do CPR, that seemed like the best thing for us to do. And for us, it worked really well, except till we got to the end and we put him in head first and we went, oh, we did what we always do. We should have put him in feet first and we pulled him out and turned him right around.
That's all right. Well, Jerry, thank you so much for coming on.
I really appreciate it.
And, you know, hopefully people will watch this and be inspired to come back. And who knows, maybe in a few years you guys are going to be the team to beat.
That's the hope. We really are hoping for that. We'll see everybody out next year in Salt Lake.
Excellent. So I want to thank all of you for checking out this segment here at Innovations in Patient Care and the MedicCast. We're here in the Physio Control booth at EMS Today 2015. And remember to keep watching this channel. We'll have more segments of all the people that we want to talk to here at the conference coming up soon.
That's going to wrap up this week's episode of the MedicCast. I want to thank all of you for checking out the show this week and, of course, remind you to follow up on all of the information you get in this week's show over at the MedicCast blog. That's at mediccast.com/blog. Over there, you'll find a show notes link at the top of the page. Go ahead and take a moment and follow up on all of the information and links to news items and more you find there each week. You can also sign up for our email newsletter that'll bring you those links directly into your email inbox each week if you want. There's a form on the right-hand side of the page. Just go ahead and fill that out, and you can get the MedicCast newsletter for yourself. I also welcome your comments and suggestions by email. So if you want to get back in touch with me, shoot me an email to podmedic@mac.com. Send in your ideas for news links, ideas for future show topics or interviews, whatever comments you might have. I really do look forward to hearing from you, and I'll make sure I get back to you. I work hard to respond back to every email that comes in, so please keep those emails coming. If you want to catch up with me on social media and some of the pages and sites out there, you can find me at most places under the handle Podmedic. So you can catch me over at Twitter at twitter.com/podmedic or Facebook at facebook.com/podmedic. Friend or follow me over there. Also, don't forget to check out our MedicCast Facebook page. We now have over 5,000 followers, so head over to facebook.com/mediccast. Click the like button on the top of the page and join the community over there. That's going to wrap up this week's episode of the MedicCast. Please make sure you spread the word and share the MedicCast with your colleagues and students and friends in the EMS world. I'll be back here each week with new episodes, new interviews, news items, tips, and more every Monday morning to start off your EMS week. Tell somebody else about the MedicCast today. I'm Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic. It's time to close out the show. Don't forget to thank our sponsors. And remember, folks, Scene Safety, BSI.